Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, July 25th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, NTSB completes 2021 bus collision investigation, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. On November 19, 2021, a service truck driving the wrong way on Interstate 20 near Big Spring struck an Andrews ISD motor coach nearly head-on. Three people died, and 50 others sustained minor to serious injuries as a result of the crash, which happened as Andrews High School students and officials were traveling to a postseason football game. In May, the National Transportation Safety Board released its final report on the crash. The investigative details included a 2016 Ford F-350 service truck traveling in the wrong direction in the eastbound lanes struck a 2005 MCI motor coach nearly head-on. The service truck then sideswiped a 2018 Freightliner bus. The motor coach sustained frontal damage. The 2018 Freightliner bus sustained minor damage to its left side. And a post-crash fire consumed the service truck. Nathan Paul Hale, 59, of Midland, was driving the service truck, according to the Department of Public Safety. There are no known reasons why the service truck driver was traveling the wrong way on Interstate 20, according to the NTSB. The factors that were most often cited as a causal in the wrong-way crashes, such as alcohol use, issues associated with older drivers, and possible drug involvements, were not factors in this crash, the NTSB reported. The following were other highlights of the report. The service truck traveled about 1 mile west from the location of the exit 179 ramp when the crash occurred. Surveillance videos from local businesses in Big Spring showed the service truck driver traveling the wrong way on East 3rd Street and passed Do Not Enter and Wrong Way signs before entering Interstate 20, traveling west in the eastbound lanes. The service truck driver encountered at least four vehicles heading toward him before the crash occurred. A witness, who was affiliated with the Andrews Independent School District, was driving a car in front of the caravan and spoke to police at the crash, stated that he was in the right lane and had to swerve into the left as he, the service truck driver, was coming head-on in the right lane. The car's passenger tried to call the band director who was in the motor coach to warn the motor coach occupants about the wrong-way driver, but she heard the crash as she was making the phone call. After the collision with the service truck, the motor coach traveled into the median and struck the cable barrier before coming to a rest. The service truck came to rest in the right lane of eastbound I-20 and was consumed by a post-crash fire. The travel speeds of the truck, motor coach, and bus involved in the crash were unknown. As a result of the November 19th crash, the Texas Department of Transportation reviewed crashes in the vicinity of 3rd and 4th Streets in Big Spring since 2012 and found that 10 were attributable to wrong-way drivers. The 10 wrong-way driving crashes and this fatal crash led the Texas Department of Transportation Abilene District to undertake an initiative to evaluate and improve traffic operations and signage at all ramp connections and at-grade crossovers on 5-lane divided highways. All ramps and crossover are being inspected by the 3-area engineers to ensure that proper signage is in place, conforming to Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices for Streets and Highways standards. In addition to the required signage, all ramps will have a wrong-way arrow installed. That includes raised retroreflective pavement markers displaying a reflected red light to wrong-way drivers. The projects to inspect and add signage and new pavement markings are expected to be completed by the end of calendar year 2023. Other improvements completed include do not enter and wrong way signs installed at all signalized intersections on 3rd and 4th Streets, wrong way signs installed on every other block with wrong way pavement marking arrows placed on the roadway pavement at intermediate intervals between the signs, and one-way signs have been placed on all traffic signals and stop signs. This article is entitled, Amarillo Man Dies in Two-Vehicle Crash on Highway, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 34-year-old Amarillo man died Saturday after a two-vehicle collision on State Highway 349, the Craddock Highway, in North Midland County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Luis Castaneda was traveling westbound on the Craddock Highway in a 2022 Ford F-150 when, for unknown reason, Castaneda traveled into the eastbound lane and collided with a 2012 Peterbilt truck with trailer. Castaneda was pronounced deceased at the scene. The accident took place at 3:45 p.m. on State Highway 349, mile marker 324, around three-quarters of a mile north of Midland. DPS reported Castaneda was not wearing a seatbelt. This crash remains under investigation. The fatality is the 24th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter-Telegram records. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Chevron Considers Lithium Production, by Mitchell Furman and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation is considering opportunities to produce lithium that would be used in electric vehicle batteries, Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth said in a Bloomberg interview. Extracting lithium fits with the core capabilities of a company like Chevron that has deep experience producing oil and gas, Wirth said on Sunday, without providing details of specific plans. Earlier in July, ExxonMobil Corporation CEO Darren Woods said the energy giant is exploring opportunities to produce lithium. The price and availability of lithium is crucial to whether EVs can scale up. The lithium interest from U.S. oil majors contrasts with their counterparts in Europe, which have been more aggressive in certain energy transition areas like wind, solar, and power services. U.S. companies have focused on adjacent areas of their fossil fuel business, such as carbon capture and storage, hydrogen, and lithium. Chevron itself has made clear it has no plans to invest significantly in big wind and solar projects, saying the returns are low and the competition is too high. Chevron, originally scheduled to report quarterly earnings this Friday, posted better-than-expected earnings as output in the Permian Basin soared to a record, and also said it waived the mandatory retirement age of 65 for Wirth. This article is entitled, Chevron Extends CEO's Tenure, Beats Earnings Forecast. Chevron Corporation posted better-than-average earnings as output in the Permian Basin soared to a record, by Kevin Crowley and David Weth, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation posted better-than-expected earnings as output in the Permian Basin soared to a record, and the oil giant said it waived the mandatory retirement age for Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth. Though adjusted earnings of $3.08 per share were higher than the Bloomberg consensus, net income dropped to $6 billion, according to a statement Sunday. It's the fourth straight quarter of lower results for Chevron, which have fallen to almost half the level of a year earlier, when oil prices surged after Russia invaded Ukraine. The second quarter earnings, originally set to be posted July 28th, come as Chevron is on a quest for record shareholder returns this year. Other management changes in the surprise announcement included the retirement next year of Chief Financial Officer Pierre Braber. Worth, 62, said in an interview that the board asked him to stay around past the usual retirement age of 65 during a turbulent time in the markets. "There's more that I want to do," Worth said, adding that he's excited to continue. Chevron maintained its elevated share buyback despite the lower commodity prices, passing the first real challenge to payout, which it raised multiple times over the last 18 months, coming off the back of record earnings. At a rate of $17.5 billion a year, Chevron's buyback is equal to that of ExxonMobil Corporation, which has a 40% bigger market value. Still, Chevron's stock has languished this year, down 12% through Friday, compared with a 4% decline in the S&P 500 Energy Index. Worth has struggled to persuade investors that Chevron has enough fossil fuel projects in its locker to maintain targeted annual production growth rates of about 3%. Further, the company was forced to redraw its drilling plan in the Permian Basin earlier this year as wells underperformed expectations. By contrast, rival Exxon has a plethora of growth opportunities. Worth attempted to ease some of these concerns by agreeing to buy Colorado-based PDC Energy Inc. for $6.3 billion in stock in May. The goal is to expand Chevron's operations in the DJ Basin, which Worth believes can offer high returns with low risk. Braber will retire on March 1, 2004, and be succeeded as CFO by Emir Bonner, currently the Vice President and Chief Technology Officer, the company said. Chevron said in the second quarter it produced the equivalent of 772,000 barrels of oil per day in the Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico, registering a new quarterly record for the company in the world's busiest shale patch. This article is entitled "City Leaders to Decide on $4.412 million Paul Davis Wellfield Project" by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council will decide Tuesday on awarding a $4.412 million contract for a Paul Davis Wellfield Project. The contract would be with Hydro Resources Mid-Continent Inc. of Buda for a cost of $4,412,775. The purpose is the construction of new public water source groundwater wells. "These wells are crucial for our city's emergency and drought contingency water source, specifically located in the Paul Davis well field," wrote Carl Crago in an agenda packet document. "Given the specialized nature of this project and the need for timely completion, Hydro Resources Mid-Continent Inc. provides a reasonable and acceptable offer under the prevailing circumstances." Paul Davis is maintained as an emergency supply of water. The city of Midland could bring that water into town for fire protection, not for drinking. Inside the consent agenda also is a resolution ratifying the purchase and approving payment for emergency pump and motor replacement at the Midland T-Bar well field performed by Mark's Water Well Service, Inc., for a total cost of $132,500. More costs of city government on the Tuesday's agenda. The council will decide on spending $1.852 million on a Spartan Gladiator 100 aerial truck for the Midland Fire Department. The budget for this equipment is $1.8 million. This pumper is a replacement for a unit that has gone beyond its serviceable life, according to agenda packet documents. The council will have the opportunity to approve $450,300 to help pay for costs and contingencies related to an irrigation project at Windlands Park. The contract would be with M3 Landscape Maintenance and Irrigation of Midland. This article is entitled Midland, Hot Dry Conditions in the Forecast by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The National Weather Service forecast doesn't offer much variety over the next week. High temperatures will range from 98 degrees to 102 degrees, and low temperatures will fall in the low to mid-70s. There also is no rain in the seven-day forecast, just sunny skies. Weather report. Monday's high, 102 degrees. Typical for July 24th, 96 degrees. Monday's low, 76 degrees. Typical low for July 24th, 73 degrees. Record high for July 24th, 106 degrees in 1995. Last 3 days, Saturday, 94 degrees, Sunday, 101, Monday, 102. Next 3 days, Tuesday, 102 degrees, Wednesday, 101, Thursday, 100 degrees. Source for this article, the National Weather Service. This article is entitled Midland County Leaders OK Burn Ban by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Midland County Commissioners approved an outdoor burning ban for Midland County on Monday. As of today, all outdoor burning in Midland County is prohibited for the next 90 days, according to the county. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch has told the Reporter-Telegram that the county would not enact a burn ban until the county's KBI, Keech Byram Drought Index, was at or above 575. Midland County's drought index Monday was 596. According to the Texas A&M Forest Service website, the following is consistent with a score of 600 to 800. Often associated with more severe drought with increased wildfire occurrence. Intense, deep burning fires with extreme intensities can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels. The National Weather Service reported that 1.79 inches of precipitation has fallen at Midland International Airport year-to-date through Sunday. That total is 5.39 inches below normal through July 23rd. There is no rain in the seven-day forecast, according to the NWS, and the Climate Prediction Center calls for average rainfall and a 50 to 60% chance of above-average temperatures from August through October. Residents can still burn household trash because the county does not provide trash services. The trash can only be household and must be burned in a barrel. As of late last week, Midland was surrounded by counties with burn bans, except for Andrews and Crane. This article is entitled Midlanders Can Meet New Animal Services Manager by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midlanders have a chance to meet the City of Midland's new animal services manager, Melissa Hobson, during a special Rescue Runners on August 5th. Rescue Runners takes place on the first and third Saturdays of the month at the Midland Animal Shelter. Rescue Runners is a volunteer program designed to recruit people to help walk or run shelter dogs, the city reported. Rescue Runners happens from 8 to 10 a.m. Learn more at midlandtexas.gov/1095/rescue-runners. The City of Midland describes Hobson as a skilled professional with a passion for animal care and welfare. With a background in veterinary medicine, research, and teaching, she possesses exceptional skills in communication, leadership, and creating nurturing environments. Hobson has earned a Bachelor of Science degree in biology, specializing in freshwater and marine biology from the University of Texas at Austin, and further expanding her knowledge with an MBA and a Master of Science in Leadership from Grand Canyon University. With experience as a veterinary assistant, veterinary technician, and in an animal emergency hospital, Melissa has shown dedication to animal well-being and has additional expertise as a diver and saltwater aquarist, the City of Midland reported. Melissa's leadership experience, strong academic foundation, combined with her experience in veterinary medicine, research, and teaching, positions her to make a significant impact as the animal services manager. Christina O. Burns, Director of Community Services, wrote, "We are excited to welcome Melissa as she works toward creating a better community for pets and their owners through education, compassion, and advocacy." The City of Midland also wrote, "Melissa enjoys her role as a loving wife and mother, in which they share a home filled with four dogs and a cat. She actively promotes responsible pet ownership, emphasizing the importance of spaying and neutering pets, educating them about vaccines and heartworm prevention, and advocating for overall animal health and happiness." Hobson begins with the City of Midland on August 1st. This article is entitled MISD to Vote on Early College High School Agreement through 2028 by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland ISD Board will have the opportunity to approve a Memorandum of Understanding to continue operations of Early College High School at Midland College through the 2027-28 school year. Early College High School has been Midland ISD's most successful school in terms of academic performance, with 99% of students passing state-mandated testing. Its academic performance also is a reason ECHS is ranked among the top 200 high schools in the state of Texas, according to U.S. News & World Report, and was a factor in its selection as National Blue Ribbon School by the U.S. Department of Education. This Memorandum of Understanding supports all board academic goals for secondary students as ECHS provides a select group of high school students the opportunity to complete both their high school diploma and an associate's degree during their high school years, agenda packet information states. Midland ISD reports that the Memorandum of Understanding also calls for the expansion of seats available to MISD students at ECHS to approximately 500. The goals of the partnership are to reduce dropout rates, attract and better prepare students for higher education, ensure students receive the support necessary to be successful in college, and provide MISD students with a seamless transition between high school and college, Midland ISD reported. Midland College waives tuition to all current MISD students, and scholarships will be pursued to cover the cost of tuition and fees for college credit courses for each ECHS at MC student enrolled in such courses. MISD will provide necessary college textbooks and teaching materials. College-approved textbooks purchased by MISD may be used for the time period consistent with local college practices, but not fewer than 2 years. MISD will also fund any placement testing fees. Midland ISD's board meeting is set for 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at Bowie Fine Arts Academy. This article is entitled "Oil Hits Three-Month High Amid Tighter Supplies" by Julia Fanzarez, Bloomberg. Oil rose to a three-month high, closing above a key technical barrier, as signs of a tighter crude market outweighed the prospect of another hike from the Federal Reserve. West Texas Intermediate settled above $78 a barrel as OPEC Plus cuts begin to materialize, tightening global supplies. Adding to the intraday rally was an outage at Exxon's Baton Rouge refinery, where a gasoline-making catalytic cracker may be down for several weeks. The disruption during the high-demand summer driving season also boosted the 3-2-1 crack, a measure of the profitability of turning crude into fuel, to the highest since March. U.S. benchmark crude closed above its 200-day moving average, which has provided strong resistance since August. Oil holding above that threshold could spur additional buying. Risk-on sentiment in equity markets, which are trading near the highest levels this year, also is bolstering crude. Crude is still down slightly for the year, despite the production cuts by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies, including Russia. On the demand side, China's stalled recovery has provided a persistent headwind for industrial commodities, but the nation has signaled it will add stimulus to boost its economy. Commentary out of China is disappointing to some markets, but the fact that we are seeing stimulus, if they do anything to support the economy, it's positive for crude, because I don't think crude has priced in stimulus, said Rebecca Babin, a senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth. Among other metrics, there are signs of strength in the market's underlying structure. West Texas Intermediate's prompt spread, the difference between its two nearest contracts, was about 36 cents a barrel in backwardation, a bullish pattern that's near the widest since mid-November. This article is entitled Water Use Increase Trails Pre-2011 Levels. City. Heat wave not having great impact on city's groundwater sources. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The recent record-breaking heat wave has raised water usage, but is having little impact on the City of Midland's groundwater sources. Carl Crago, Director of Utilities for the City of Midland, reported this week there has been an increase in water use. He said City of Midland water customers are, on average, using 30 million gallons of water a day in 2023. He added that the average is around 34 million gallons of water a day during the summer, with the increase because of lawn watering taking place. One other notable from Midlanders' water use was that 40.7 million gallons have been used in one day, which is a level of usage not seen since water prices were raised in 2012 following the historic drought of 2011. Heading into the drought of 2011, Midlanders were using as much as 42 million gallons a day, the city previously reported. Crago said increased water usage has impacted the surface water the city uses on a daily basis, like Colorado River Municipal Water District supply. The City of Midland operates as a take-or-pay customer based on the CRMWD contract. The minimum daily average of water that the City of Midland must take from the CRMWD this fiscal year will be about 16.3 million gallons a day, Crago previously told the Reporter-Telegram. By 2030, that amount climbs to 17.5 million. The increased usage, according to Crago, is helping the city fulfill its take-or-pay obligation. On Monday, the CRMWD showed the following lake levels on its website. 34.4% full at O.H. Ivy Reservoir, 17% full at E.V. Spence Reservoir, and 20.9% full at Lake J.B. Thomas. Groundwater sources include those at T-Bar Ranch and other City of Midland-owned sources inside Winkler County. The National Weather Service reported Sunday that 1.79 inches of rain has fallen at Midland International Airport this calendar year. That total is 5.39 inches below what is normal through July 23rd. The Climate Prediction Center calls for average rainfall and a 50 to 60% chance of above average temperatures from August through October. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, July 25th. Davelyn Griffith. Most days, you could find her watching old westerns or painting in the back room. But today, Davelyn Bryant Griffith is in heaven, experiencing more beauty than any of us can fathom. Davelyn Griffith went home to be with our Lord and Savior on July 20th. Her death was unexpected, and our hearts are heavy. She was 65 when she passed away peacefully and surrounded by family. Davelyn Griffith was born in Queen City, Texas, to Marjorie and David Bryant. Davelyn is survived by her husband, Craig Griffith, her two children, Whitney Wright, husband Randy Wright, and Andrea Griffith. She is also survived by her sister, Karen Burt, husband Richard Burt, her brother Tommy Bryant, wife Andrea Bryant, daughters Katie and Jay, and son Thomas. Davelyn was predeceased by her mother and father, Marjorie and David Bryant. She is forever remembered by Gordon Griffith, wife Christy, daughter Brittany, and son Ryan, and Marvella McElia, husband Martin, daughter Alyssa, and sons Addison and Alexander. A viewing will be held at Mayberry Funeral Home in Midland on Monday, July 24th from 2 to 6 p.m., with a visitation following from 6 to 8 p.m. A celebration of life service will be held at First Methodist Church in Midland at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, July 25th. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you make a donation in Davelyn's name to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or your church's children's ministry. Frank Ingram Everidge, December 6, 1944 to July 21, 2023. Frank Ingram Everidge of Midkiff, Texas, left this earthly life on July 21st. He was born December 6, 1944, in Brownwood, to J.B. and Sue Wagoner Everidge. On October 4, 1969, Frank married Joyce Schreyer in Rowena, Texas, and they shared 53 years together. Those left to cherish Frank's memory include his wife Joyce of Midkiff, daughter Jody Everidge of Houston, daughter and son-in-law Jenny and Sam Newland of Katy, and their daughters Lily and Grayson, and son and daughter-in-law John and Amanda Everidge of Midkiff, and their children Macy, Benton, and Levi. He was preceded in death by his parents, J.B. and Sue Wagoner Everidge, his in-laws Arnold and Lily Schwartner Schreyer, sister and brother-in-law Judy and Michael Schmickel, and sister Amanda Jean Everidge. Frank's rosary will be at 6 p.m. Wednesday, July 26th at St. Lawrence Catholic Church in St. Lawrence. The funeral service will be officiated by Father Tom Barley at 10 a.m. Thursday, July 27th at St. Lawrence Catholic Church, with interment to follow at St. Lawrence Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Richard Auburn Brown. When you lose someone you love, you gain an angel that you know. Our lives were forever changed on July 19, 2023, when our brother Richard Auburn Brown joined many of our loved ones in heaven. He is the amazing son born to the late Lewis and Ginger Brown and the awesome brother of Ramona Maciejek, Frank Viegas, Toby Randolph, Daniel Randolph, and Mark Schultz. We will be honoring his incredible life on Wednesday, July 26th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland, with a viewing at 1 p.m. and service at 2 p.m., followed with a short drive to Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton for his final resting next to his mom and dad. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Wayne Culverhouse. Our beloved Wayne Culverhouse, 90, of Midland, went to be with his Lord and Savior on Friday, July 21st, surrounded by family at Midland Memorial Hospital. A visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, July 25th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 26th, at Terrace Cemetery in Post, Texas. Wayne was born on July 24, 1932, in Pioneer, Texas, to James Sewell and Eula Mae Turner Culverhouse. He was preceded in death by his parents, his brothers Bill Culverhouse and Eugene Culverhouse, his sisters Dorothy Phillips, Lucille Granbury, Florence Norwood, and Mary Ruth Lawson. He is survived by his wife, Elwanda of Midland, Texas, his sister Beverly St. Germain of Alamogordo, New Mexico, and sister-in-law Nancy Culverhouse of Odessa. His daughters Camille Martin of Midland and Kimberly Pierce and her husband Herb of Lampasas, Texas. 6 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. So, in lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Samaritan's Purse, P.O. Box 3000, Boone, North Carolina, 28607. Or Bridges for Peace, P.O. Box 410037, Melbourne, Florida, 32941. Or Teen Challenge, P.O. Box 251, Midland, 79702. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Michael Foster. Michael Foster, 61, of Midland, passed away July 22nd. No service is planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, July 25th. Bond amount goes up. With changes the legislature has made, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray told the Board of Trustees during a bond workshop Tuesday they could have $427,155,000 for a potential bond without raising taxes. Trustees would have to call the bond on or before August 21st for a November 7th election. The board also discussed taking a new middle school out of the package, repurposing underused campuses, and having town hall meetings across Ector County to explain the bond. Board members said they want to get out into the community, find out what they will vote for, and get something across the finish line. The bond committee had been working with a no tax increase threshold of $396 million, but Murray said he told them that number could be different once the legislature finished its work and the district has new information. We always told the committee that number could be different once the legislature finishes and once we have new information. Now we have more information, that number is bigger. We're still following what the committee said, no tax increase, but we have a higher number than we can use, Murray said. How did they get the higher number? It's a formula. Look at your M&O tax, your INS tax, your property values, and there's tax compression. There's a lot of different factors that go into this, and so those factors that are in the formula have changed, Murray said. We told the committee the whole time this probably won't be the number. We think it's going to be higher. M&O stands for maintenance and operations, which makes up the general fund, and INS stands for interest and sinking and goes to pay debt like bonds. The total tax rate for ECISD is currently $1.17 per $100. According to a column from Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, Senate Bill 2 increases the homestead exemption from $40,000 to $100,000 and taps surplus revenue to provide $12.7 billion in property tax relief over the next 2 years by reducing school district maintenance and operations M&O tax rates by 10.7 cents per $100 of taxable value to buy down school district maintenance and operation rates. Additionally, the column says Senate Bill 2 creates a 20% appraisal cap applicable for tax years 2024, 2025, and 2026 for non-homestead properties with an appraised value of $5 million or less. The current 10% appraisal cap that applies to your homestead remains in place. It's the community's bond issue. They're going to make the decision on what they will accept and what they won't accept. It's about the needs of our children and projecting those needs into the next 10 to 15 years, Trustee Steve Brown said. Board member Bob Thayer said the November election would have a normal voting pattern, but if there's a reason to vote against something, people will vote against it. Mary said ECISD has $1.8 billion worth of needs, but recommendations from the bond committee include a new career and technical education center for $80 million. Mary said the district has a commitment from the Permian Strategic Partnership to contribute, but he didn't know how much, so the project would be in excess of $80 million. A new middle school for $120 million. Priority one item of $48.4 million. These items need to be fixed right away, Murray said. It was $51 million, but was reduced because the district has done some of the maintenance. Priority two items of $72.7 million that need to be fixed in 3 to 5 years. Also, a new transportation department building and buses, technology, fine arts, building a new transition learning center, athletic needs, and replacing old buildings on the agricultural farm. These items also include furniture and fixtures, Mary said. Part of the board's process is to receive the recommendation from the committee and then to make it their own. Sometimes making it your own means you need to make some adjustments, and so that's the conversation tonight. The majority have to feel comfortable with what's in the bond package. This is healthy discussion, Mary said. Opioid settlement on agenda for commissioners. The Ector County Commissioners Court will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday to discuss a number of items, including budget matters for the Community Supervision and Corrections Department. Commissioners will also discuss removing Heidi Zavala from the SART appointee list and replacing her with Jeannie Martinez, the price increase on paper towels and bath tissue, approving a 3-year contract with Cintas for uniforms, an agreement for fleet maintenance, request for qualifications, road construction inspection services, RFQ number 2308-2302, bids for housekeeping equipment and housekeeping supplies for building maintenance. Housekeeping equipment and supplies bid were awarded to Wagner Dade on September 2021, with options to renew for 4 additional 1-year periods. There is no price increase for next year's budget. Henderson Building Roof Replacement Project, Medicare Advantage and Drug Plan Insurance for Retirees. The specifications will help select a third-party Medicare administrator to process Medicare and pharmaceutical claims and the specifications are ready to distribute to vendors upon approval. Purchase of two 2023 Ford Transit 250 vans through a TIPS cooperative purchasing contract in the amount of $89,806.50 to replace a previous order that was canceled by the Ford Motor Company. To approve the inmate housing interlocal agreement between Garza County and Ector County, including increases in the per diem rate, the biennial renewal of the interlocal agreement between Regional Public Defender Office Local Government Cooperation and Ector County, approve inter-service contracts with Astound for the Ector County Courthouse and the Sheriff's Office, agreement specifications with developer Ron Chestnut about streetlights, replat of Blake Subdivision, Frontier West Mobile Home Park. Discuss, execute the settlement, participation and release forms regarding settlement offers from Walgreens, CVS, and Walmart in the matter of Texas opioid multi-district litigation for the county in the matter of County of Ector versus Purdue Pharma LP et al. Teachers prosper in Fort Stockton. District's new salary schedule rewards those in key subject areas. Potentially paying up to $75,000 per year for teachers with no experience, Fort Stockton ISD is doing things a new way and loving it. With 2,200 students and 180 teachers on six campuses, the district is rewarding and heavily incentivizing teachers in the disciplines of English, mathematics, and science. The district has nearly 400 employees total. It also provides teacher housing. For the second year running, with a budget just under $40 million and zero deficit spending, Superintendent Gabriel Zamora said, Fort Stockton has five salary scales. They then developed the zone where there are six zones of pay. Zamora said they broke them into zones because they are front-loading pay, and those $75,000 a year teachers will be making the same amount for a few years. The regular Fort Stockton ISD salary scale for a zero-year certified teacher starts at $55,000. Zamora explained that the top salary gives teachers who had moved into non-star tested areas and grades the incentive to go back to core subject areas. The system is also aimed at encouraging teachers who don't have their certifications to get them and teach in tested areas like English, math, and science, which are what the state evaluates districts on. English and math go from third grade through high school, fifth and eighth grade biology counts in science, and eighth grade history and U.S. history in high school. Those that make $75,000 must be fully certified in the areas the district has identified as zone eligible and accepted additional responsibilities that come with the privilege being zone, Zamora said. When a district or a campus doesn't do well, who gets the heat? Zamora asked. Those specific teachers, and they're getting paid in most cases the same as the art teacher, the PE teacher, the teacher who's teaching social studies in a non-testable subject grade, and an elementary teacher who's in second grade and below and doesn't have the stress or consequences of having to deal with underperforming at the end of the year. So what did our people and people throughout the state do? They moved away from those subject areas. They requested transfers to get out of third grade and be placed in second and first grade. Teachers move away from the most difficult subjects because it's an annual pay raise. Typically, you transfer during the summer. Zamora said Fort Stockton is using the same money that's available to most districts, but it's distributing it in the most important areas. When we did that last year, we had the highest number of transfer requests in the district's history because when we explained it to our staff how it was that someone could earn $72,500 starting or even higher if they'd been with the district longer, they now had a reason to go back into the fire, into the more difficult subject areas, he said. Many of our teachers who were already certified in them had found ways to wiggle away into the easier areas, Zamora said. Zamora said every school district in Texas and eventually the country will have to adopt some form of his system. We kept it pretty hush-hush last year as we developed the concept and approved it, he said. Last year, the number was $72,500. Now it's up to $75,000 for a zero-year teacher, potentially. Zamora said it gives a big advantage to Fort Stockton, a city of 8,500 people, 83 miles south-southwest of Odessa. You know, being from Odessa, that it's difficult recruiting teachers out to West Texas, he said. Throughout the state and states, it has become a real issue. Last year, when Fort Worth ISD announced a $65,000 starting salary for teachers, Zamora said, they just killed themselves because there's a rule that says that once salary is moving up, you can't move it back down without the district being in some sort of financial crisis or exigency. The zone, the highest in our five pay system, is the one where a zero-year teacher can start at $75,000, Zamora said. There are a whole lot of them out there who are not certified, but are working towards certification and will then join the higher of the two pay systems, the superintendent said. We grandfathered some non-certified people in when I arrived in Fort Stockton 2 years ago, and the starting salary was $47,000. With the new system that we put into place, I let everyone know we would never give another raise to somebody who wasn't certified, and thus we created the different salary scales. New hires who are not certified would be making $40,000, with the district holding back $7,000 back. If the educator makes adequate progress or earns certification sometime during the year, they get the $7,000. My intent behind that is that these people who are already here were making $47,000 or $47,500 or $48,000 because they've been in the district for numerous years. So I wouldn't want to take something that they'd already been getting away because they might be stretching every last dollar already. That's why we grandfathered the non-certified teachers that were in district into the old salary scale, but new non-certified employees that come in, we hold that money back, not to hurt them. But hey, look, you're coming in. This is what the deal is. You got these extra 7 G's, but you've got to show that you're working toward getting certified. We're essentially giving them 2 years to do it. If they become certified, then they make more money because they get prorated based on the number of days they have left on to the next highest salary scale. It isn't to punish them or hurt them, it's to give them a financial incentive and a reason to get certified, Zamora said. Zamora added, too many teachers are not certified and too many had just been floating for many years because there are no incentive and no penalty other than getting rid of them when we need them. So they were getting paid the same as a certified teacher. He said the district will listen to reasons why a teacher may not have gotten certified in the roughly 2-year period, but if it comes down to you just didn't do what you were supposed to do, then you're back to the 40, and maybe we do need you because, as you know, teachers are in short supply right now. But if they are willing to work for $40,000, Zamora said, it means it helps fund the higher paid teachers. He will be in Austin July 28th presenting at an executive academy for James Guerra, who is one of the biggest search consultants in the state, primarily for superintendents. Beach Boys to Jam for a Cause. Odessa can expect to feel some good vibrations this summer when the Beach Boys perform at the Education Foundation's annual benefit concert. This event is July 27th at the Ector County Coliseum, and the concert starts at 8:30 p.m. The Beach Boys are led by Mike Love, who, along with longtime member Bruce Johnston, musical director Scott Totem, Brian Eckenberger, Christian Love, Tim Bonham, John Cowsill, Keith Hubucker, and Randy Liago, continue the legacy of the iconic band. This concert will not feature Brian Wilson, Al Jardine, and David Marks. This is a very iconic band to be able to bring, especially since Mike Love is still touring with the band, Education Foundation Director Celeste Potter said. I actually had the pleasure of seeing them in concert about 7 years ago in Lubbock, and it was a very, very good show, so I'm very excited to have them coming in July. This is the sole fundraiser for the Education Foundation, so it's the funds they raise through this event that allow them to do everything that they do to support the teachers and students in ECISD. Historically, they've been able to raise enough money in this one event to sustain all of the active programming that they have going on, Potter added. People can contribute even without going to the concert. Potter said the Education Foundation is a nonprofit and they always accept donations. Individuals can make donations specific to a program, so if they want to support the Bookworms Literacy Program or grants for teachers, they can donate specifically to those programs, or they can just do a general donation to the Education Foundation at any time, she added. Immediate past Foundation Board President and Concert Co-Chair Jay Arick said they are able to get bands like the Beach Boys because they have contracts with some of the big talent agencies like William Morris and CAA. Paul Braxter is the Concert Co-Chair. They see who is available and touring this year, who might be in the right price range, and talk through who might be willing to do it given the fact that the foundation is a charitable organization trying to help education, Eric said. They also have to find dates that line up with possible venues in West Texas. The Beach Boys turned up as a possibility, which he said was pretty exciting for everyone. Arik said they are seeing the universal appeal of the band with table sales and general admission tickets already. We've been fortunate to be profitable and raise good money every year they've been doing it. We really don't have a target amount. We're just trying to raise as much as possible, he added. Arik said they had tried some different bands the last 5 to 6 concerts, but this year we really wanted to get someone with mass appeal, and the Beach Boys is a great way to do that, he added. They have seen ticket sales from Lubbock and the surrounding areas. Honestly, we see that every concert, which is nice. Usually our acts are good enough that we pull people from the region, Arik said. They hope to attract 4,000 people to the Coliseum. We have some changes that we're doing this year that I think should make it a real fun night. So hopefully everybody in the community comes and joins us, Arik said. He added that the Beach Boys require the decorating to be a little bit unique, and they are going to have everything inside the Coliseum this year and not using Barn G. Potter noted that these events are critical to the Education Foundation because it's their primary source of funding. If they don't raise money through events like the concert, they're not going to be able to continue to do for very long the things they do to support our teachers and students, which makes it very important for the district that this concert be successful because that's additional funding for teachers. The foundation has been able to give the teachers within the district more than $2.8 million through their grants program alone, Potter said. She added that the Bookworms Literacy Program is growing to second grade next year. That's 12,000 books each month that are getting into the hands of students in the district, And all of that's possible through the community supporting events like the concert, Potter said. The Bookworms program includes book vending machines that the foundation purchased for the district when ECISD had its 100th anniversary a couple of years ago. Each year, the Education Foundation fills those machines at the beginning of each school year, Potter said. Sponsorship tables for this event are available by calling the Education Foundation office at 432-456-7059 or email educationfoundation.odessa@outlook.com. Reserved seating tickets went on sale April 1st at the Ector County Coliseum box office and may be purchased online at boxofficesolutions.net or at 1-800-514-3849. Tickets prices are $45 and $65 plus a handling fee. The Beach Boys have sold over 100 million records worldwide and have received more than 33 RIAA Platinum and Gold Record Awards. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famers were also honored at the 2001 Grammy Awards with a Lifetime Achievement Award. With more than five decades of touring under their belts, the Beach Boys have performed more concerts than any major rock band in history.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.